Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us. Hello, and welcome back. We're here with another episode of In Search of Tarot. I am your co-host, Angie, and today we've got a great conversation lined up for you between myself and Daje Alo. Now, before we get into the conversation, I wanted to invite you into our little book club that we've been hosting over the last month or so. We're reading Radical Tarot by the friend of the podcast, Charlie Claire Burgess, and that has been so much fun. If you've missed out on those episodes, we've done two so far, kind of recapping our conversation between us and Charlie, and also our first chunk of the book, which we've divided that up into three segments that we'll be discussing over the next 2 months as well. So if you would like to join in on the conversation, you can use the discount code that we have in the profile of our Instagram, and you can get $5 off that book. And you can also join the Patreon and join our hangs, where we're going to discuss what popped up for you and any fun themes over the next couple of months. So that has been a joy for us to do, and we hope you join us. So, getting into this conversation between myself and Daje. Daje is a creator that I found about 2 years ago at a time where I was really creatively burned out. And their course at the time, it was called The Brave School. And it was such a balm to me. Our conversation spans over topics of death moments and tower moments, what it means to shed narratives or avatars of what we think or how we think we should show up. And finding our creative voice. Anyway, here's the conversation between me and Daje Alo of The Story Doula.
My name is Daje Alo, and I go by The Story Doula on Instagram. And years ago, I founded a company that was like kind of this like child of my heart called Brave School. And it was quite accidental, actually, how I founded that little company. Didn't intend to do any kind of coaching on like a public platform. Like, I had been walking with creatives in my own local community, like in person, and like had taken on like freelancing and creative direction projects and like having lots of coffee with people locally. Like, I served on the Mayor's Maker Council and did a bunch of like stuff. But online, I didn't know that Brave School would come out until one day this young woman reached out to me on LinkedIn, and she reached out for like support in figuring out what the first steps were going to be in her business, because she was like fresh, she just started. And I was just like, oh yeah, let's talk about it. And I accidentally became a business coach in that moment, and that was like 2019, and I didn't mean to do that, but it happened. And it lit me up and it set me on fire, and it made me realize, oh, there's not a lot of conversations for like highly sensitive, neurodivergent people out there who are sharing their work with the world and also are really attuned to the subtle, or what we call in the mainstream magic. Mm-hmm. And we need to create that place. We need to have these conversations. We need to talk about how we can all feel the temperature of the market shifting. We need to talk about creative courage from this place of like what we can feel and sense and what we see. And so Brave School became a mystery school of the creative process. And then there came a time for Brave School to close, to end, for me to practice the regenerative marketing that I was teaching inside of Brave School and allow that iteration of it to have a death. And so it was very ceremonial for me to close that school. And we had over 100 members inside of our like membership community, and then thousands of people who had joined like our workshops and our like other things that we had done that were one off. And it was just major to like close that and feel the right time for it. But I trust it, and I trust the space that was made and the healing that I needed to undergo from burnout. And yeah, just deconditioning from the ways that I had learned how to do, like that were still in my system.
Yeah. Like, I would love to hear, because you tell your story through, I mean, back then it was Brave School and now it's through the Story Doula, but you were talking about how you came to this place and you're originally from the Appalachian area. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. So I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. So I'm actually from the Mississippi River, like that area, right where Tennessee and Mississippi touch. A very special place. And then I spent the last 11 years of my life as an adult in Knoxville. I went to Knoxville, which is in Appalachia, for school. And I stayed, I got married, I got divorced there, and really cultivated a relationship with that place that is like, it's just completely sewn into my heart. Appalachia is so.
Yeah. I sense that you're a person that has, as you've shared a little bit of this on your online presence, you've been through many different versions of yourself and many different reshapings of yourself. You know, I would love to hear a little bit of like the pieces of yourself that you've brought to now, of course, in a very like spiralic way, and how that informs the work that you do.
Well, it's my belief that it's human nature to change. It's human nature to shed layers of who we are. And for some reason, I just think it's so interesting. For some reason in our modern culture, we don't hold that as like a law. Like, you know, we know traffic laws and we know, you know, laws for taxes, but we don't know that it's like human nature to shift and shed and change. And to, you know, one way to say it is you become different versions of yourself. Another way to say it is you just become more of yourself and less like what you've been conditioned to be. And so yeah, for me, there's been a lot of change. And I used to feel like really frustrated and confused by the nature of change and victimized, even if I'm to be really honest. I think a lot of us humans are victimized, feel victimized by change. But also to just notice and look back and say, and like, I would have no life without that moment where everything that I knew ruptured in some way. So for example, when I was 18, I left a cult, a bona fide cult. It was a fundamentalist, hyper fundamentalist Christian cult. And we had very specific like rules and ways of dressing. A lot of people think it's Pentecostal. It's not Pentecostal. It's much more niche than that. And, you know, if you read through blogs and things like that, I share a little bit about, you know, what that cult is. But it was really interesting to shed that layer and to like consciously shed the identity of someone who's a part of that community. Mm-hmm. And then again, to shed the identity as someone who, you know, what married her high school sweetheart. And then again, to shed the identity of like someone who was going to finish college at 22, and then again to shed the identity, you know what I mean? And so it's like, we make it so dramatic, but when I recount these tales now, I'm like, oh, that's just life. You know, life is human nature is change. And when am I going to embrace that? Right. Like, when am I going to fully take that in finally?
Yeah. I think that there was like an aha moment that I felt just a couple months ago. Actually, maybe at the beginning of this year. This year has been a sort of like time warp in and of itself for me. But earlier in the year, where I thought like where this feels like or felt like a hole previously, I see a portal now and an opportunity to try things on. And knowing that I was going to be trying things on meant that there was going to be a lot of things that didn't work. And a lot of ways that I was going to get to shape who I was by knowing a lot of, like, you know, being able to, I think Adrienne Marie Brown, I've been reading her book, Pleasure Activism. But she talks about how getting the information to know what your no is gives you a clearer idea of what your yes is. And so being able to kind of courageously step into that portal is, yeah, you're right. And it's, as Octavia Butler says, right? Like, God is change. It's inevitable. And so to embrace it fully, even though from the outside, it might not make sense to a lot of people. But I have grown to really appreciate that about who you are and the work that you do, you know? Yeah, I would love to hear a little bit about your journey from, speaking of kind of like archetypical death moments or tower moments, and being like really present with the change and how that's looked for you. You grew up, like you said, in Memphis, and then now you're in the desert. What has the desert taught you about that?
The desert has taught me so much. One of the things that I really loved about being drawn here is that this land really drew me in. And a lot of people who move to northern New Mexico have a very similar experience of like being sort of pulled in like quicksand into this landscape, into her mythic identity, into her stories, into her play. And when I got here, I was so excited. I had all of these moments, and then I was immediately humble because that's when I closed Brave School. And she was inviting me to like really do it and to trust her and to lean back and to let myself be held in the experience, which is something I think is really interesting to consider about tower moments and the tower card, is that yes, the tower is crumbling, but think about how the material is becoming almost like its original, like it's going back to its origin. It's becoming dust and it's being absorbed and held by the earth. And nothing is truly fading away. Nothing is truly, it's not truly gone. It's just dying, reemerging, and emerging back out as something else.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got here, it was true, like desert medicine turned up to 10. All of my illusions were met face to face about this life that I was going to live here. Mm-hmm. And I went through a pretty harsh breakup that led me to say, okay, I've had enough desert time. I'm going to Northern California. I'm going to go to Nevada City where the Yuba is, and I'm going to heal and live there in the woods, like a wood in Northern California. The desert started showing up in my dreams again. And she started like saying, okay, have your time, but come back. This work that you say you want to do, it's meant to be done here, right? And so having that animate relationship where with the earth, that where she's like literally coming through my dreams and being like, okay, yeah, like you're not, we're just resetting. So don't get too comfortable. And so I moved back, stayed in Northern California for a month, with a whole storage unit worth of things, but I did make it back. And it's been this like energy of like, now what will we create with the rubble of this, from this mess? Like, how will we reconstruct? How will we rebuild, you know, your belief and your remembrance and your trust in the medicine that's moving through you, the life that's flowing through you? So that's what the process has been over the last few months since moving back. It's just been like remembering and also reconfiguring my relationship to reality here in my body at this time on this land, with this work, with these invitations, with these principles that I hold.
Gosh, there were so many things that you just said that I really want to explore further. I mean, you firstly are, I'm smiling because I, like I told you before we started the recording, I grew up in Utah and it's mountainous, but it's also very deserty. And there's something so kind of bristly and hard about the plants that grow in that area and the animals that are in that area. There's a real toughness, but also a real tenderness underneath the armor that a lot of these animals and these plants wear. There is like the tender flesh, and the lessons that the desert shows you is something that is always so close to my heart. And many of the times that I'm in deep meditation, that's where I am. And so I kind of want to talk about, this was a while back on your podcast, but you were talking about reemerging from death moments as a kind of tender initiation into newness and reformulating and picking up the rubble, as you say, and trying to construct it into something new, and what that process looks like for you. And you can use, you know, whatever feels relevant to you, but I would love to hear more about that.
Absolutely. Well, this is the creative process, right? And, you know, I really feel like that was like part of the teaching is like, I started this mystery school for the creative process years ago. And like, I feel like my whole life and career has been dedicated to the creative process in one way or the other, whether it's the creative process in a business context. I've been in marketing since I was 19, right? Or if it's the creative process in a living context where the body is moving through these states of change and rupture and repair and regeneration, that is a creative process. Whether it's embracing death as a creative process, a portal through which we understand new things about the world and take on new identities, whether it's birth that's a part of the creative process, like we see that, right, where it's quite clearly a whole new human is being made, or if we are in rebirth seasons, we are being made new as humans, and there's just something there about really kind of engaging the creative process from all sides. That is what this is about. It's about like seeing the life, death, life principle beneath all of reality, and taking ourselves out of this machine landscape where we are single story, single functioning parts that are, you know, here to serve a specific function of the machine and society and reality. It's not like that. Like reality is not like that. You know, it's like, it's actually a lot more organic and fluid and textural than that. It's more complex than that. And can we live into that complexity also as a creative process? Not needing to have clear-cut answers for everything, not needing to know the next steps all the time. You know, it's I don't even know if I answered your question, but
did, but in a very Dashe way, you did. So what I mean, I guess I'm thinking about all these things that you're pointing to, which is like the creative process, but also birthing. And what that brings up to me is the clumsiness that happens. And also it's kind of like, it's sticky, it's gooey, it's not very pleasant looking in times, and it doesn't really make sense to a lot of people. I'm thinking of like a foal that's been newly born, and it's kind of like, you know, trying to find its footing. And I think that part of that can be really, that by itself can be a courageous moment, just to let yourself be really messy and reformulating who you are in this moment. Own kind of thing, but there's that, and also like something that you've said previously which really spoke to me, and it continues to speak to me, the liminal space of like silence and how important that is. You previously said on your podcast, and this is the piece that continues to speak to me, which was like, we feel such enormous pressure to be profound all the time. And sometimes the profound moments come in the moments of rest. Sometimes the profound moments come when you're taking a deep breath, and it's okay to let people see you in that silence, because when the words are spoken, they have more impact than just to be speaking, you know, whatever. Not that words aren't important, but I think that sometimes the pause can really give gravity to what comes next, you know?
Yeah, you're touching on something that is like really reverberating on something that I've been sitting with all day. It's just this idea where I just really trust people who are deeply compassionate with themselves. Like just, you know, just like relentlessly compassionate with themselves. The reason why is because there's something that compassion is cultivating, is cooking inside of them, where, you know, they're not making themselves wrong. We're not making ourselves wrong for having a human experience, for sweating, for swearing, for, you know, feeling frustration, for feeling pissed off, for feeling anger, for having a shadow, right? Like, I feel like, you know, there's something that happens to with that story of what it means to be human, where especially in the wellness world, it can almost feel like we're getting away from our human, we're running away from our human, we're trying to fix the shadow rather than engage with it. We're trying to fix the shit rather than, like, you know, regulate, you know. Yes. I don't know if it's okay to curse on this podcast, but, like, you know, are you sleeping? Are you pooping? These are like base questions for wellness. Most of us cannot say yes to both of those questions. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I love that you bring up wellness culture, because I think that there, and this happens too with well, a lot of things, but I see it a lot even in witchcraft spaces where we pull, say, for example, a card like death, or a card like the devil, and or a card like the tower, and immediately as a reader you go, oh, how can I
soften the blow
so that it feels less severe. And the truth is that you really can't, you know, to actually just take a big breath and be like, ooh, what's going on here? And like, let's just pause here and let me be with you in this and witness this mess that we're in, and not try to bypass it with something that feels better, because ultimately it's still there, right? Like, it's still this kind of swollen and sick thing that needs to be brought back to healing.
Know that if we pull the death card and then we like shuffle the deck and we're like, let's try it again, we're gonna pull the death card again. But we're gonna pull the ten of swords again, or the nine of swords again, or the five of swords, whichever little card is, like, you know, stalking, you're gonna pull it again, you know.
For sure. And the same can be said for so many different things. If you just try to bypass it, and then just like a detour, like, you're going to eventually be met with the same thing in a different place. Okay. And so just to be, I guess, not familiar with it, maybe familiar with it, but like, okay with it, just to be accepting. And you're right, compassion gives one the space to be frustrated and not have the answers. Absolutely. And for a minute. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would love to talk to you a little bit about what being a story doula means to you.
Yeah, well, I have this belief inside of me that I've had for a really long time, arguably since I was like four, that we all have stories inside of us, that, like, we all, you know, we're living stories, obviously. Like, you're living a story that's quite different than the story that I'm living. But then in those stories are other stories, micro moments, even, like, you know, brushing shoulders with someone at the supermarket on accident, or accidentally running a red light. Those are all little stories nested within stories. And so many people live their life believing that the stories that they're living are not valid or are not worthy of being told? And what happens when you live in such a way where you feel that your story is not worthy of being told? Well, you stop living your own life. You stop living your story and you start living someone else's story. You start living the story that you've been given by culture. You start living the story that you think is going to give you the most money or the most applause or the most belonging or the most acceptance. And you start to like retrofit that into your own system and body. And what happens when we put things inside of us that are inorganic, that do not belong inside of the body? Our body starts reacting to it. It starts to get sick. It starts to reject the object that we've put inside, that we forced to belong into our field of play and imagination and health and well-being. And so the reason why I'm a story doula is because I see that we live in a culture that is sick with people who don't see their stories as worth living or telling.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world where people are ashamed to be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're ashamed to reveal even 2% of the truth about themselves. And so what happens when you live in a world full of people who are afraid to reveal even 2% of themselves? Well, they start to split and reject, right? And so I want to see a world where people are liberated in their essence and are available for just how beautiful, how capable, mm-hmm. how valuable, how worthy they are in the world without some specific outside metric determining that value and that viability of soul, but to really be able to see the radical inherent belonging that we each have on the earth, and how as someone who belongs to the earth, I'm here to emanate my essence. And that no one can really take that away from me. And there's no, like, it's, you know, from that perspective, the idea of worthiness is almost like non-compute. It's like, what even is that? Like, how are we even measuring that if I'm living from this place of such a deep emanation in my root and belonging on the earth? And so then the last thing part of that is like, why do, like, relating to this idea of story doula, well, I want to see our ecosystems, economies, our cultures liberated because people are liberated in their own stories, which I believe inevitably is what will happen to our culture, our society. When people start living the truth of who they are, it will heal our world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about that from a permaculture lens or a regenerative design lens. When you look at the landscape of, like, you know, for example, a mesa or a meadow, and you look at, you know, how each and every plant, every specimen, every bug, every particle of dirt or soil, depending on where you're from, every tree, when they are able to function and exist and be without suppression, the entire ecosystem just thrives and works without they don't have to over intellectualize how they are working together. They just are. All, like, the whole ecosystem is feeding itself and becoming more proliferate in that process.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when we have a culture of people who are living their essence, living their story? Well, I think that our ecosystems will begin to heal. I think that our cultures will begin to become more whole. I think that we will become more proliferate as beings. Will have more access to our creative process and our creative flow that is not being suppressed by capitalistic aims. There's so much benefit to being a story doula, just from the outside looking in. But I've been talking about what the job description is that I've written for myself, is just like, no, I just want to see our cultures thrive again. I want to see us cultivate a world that is whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Itself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I love that you say that. And there's a couple things that are pinging for me again, but I really love the idea. And in fact, it's making me think of that that quote that Thich Nhat Hanh says, where he says, we're here to awaken from the illusion of our separateness. And that is like ultimately what we're wanting to work towards as a collective, is to be so whole within ourselves that we have no need for these other kind of avatars that we put on. And and to just reclaim our stories and things like that. So I want to ask you a couple questions. First, for someone who is trying to get low and listen, as you so often say, what can you give them as feedback, perhaps, to say, you know, it's kind of like when people are starting to really get in tune with their own self, their own inner voice, and what they're doing is looking for all these signs, and they're saying, well, maybe that was like the thing that I was supposed to gather from, or maybe that was that, was that the sign? And how can they trust what their inner voice is versus what may seem like feedback? You know, it's kind of like when you open yourself up to the world, everything looks like feedback.
Absolutely. So
what does that look like to you? And what would you advise?
Yeah. And I hear you saying that, like, we start to get a little bit addicted to looking for signs, right? Like, which is sometimes why we hire a tarot reader. Is like, give me a sign, like, tell me what's going to happen. And when you sit down with a card, when you sit down with a chart or whatever it is that you're working with as a modality, there's a part of you that knows there are infinite timelines available here. And I have no idea which one you're going to choose when you walk out of that door. And can we acknowledge that? Can we acknowledge the future as a conversation, a dialogue that we're having with an entire field of just potential? And so when I think about that, like this idea of getting low and listening and allowing the body to attune to the sweet honeyed hum of the earth or of resonance or a path or a sign or a moment, I like to think of place and time as places that we go to sort of receive like the wisdom of that place. Mm-hmm. So I think about it like this, and I've had clients like do this kind of exercise and see how it feels for them in their body. So if you're listening, I want to invite you into an experiment. I want you to choose three different physical landscapes in your, wherever you are locally. And I want them to be a little bit different from each other. There's discernible difference. And maybe you choose a stream to sit by or a river bank to sit by. Maybe you go up onto the mountain. Maybe you go into the city, wherever you are, three different landscapes. And then I want you to begin to, as you enter into that land, see your body and attune to your body and invite your body to just listen to the medicine of that place, and inviting the spirit of that place to show. Say hello to the riverbank, say hello to the mountain that you go to, say hello to the city that you know, maybe it's a coffee shop that you really love. Just say hello to the environment. So bringing your body into the room, inviting your body to listen, and then saying hello to the environment. Mm-hmm. And then just get really quiet here. This is the getting low and listening part. Just get really quiet here and just begin to attune. And notice what images, memories, thoughts, expressions show up in your field, in your psyche. And this is the screen of your psyche, right? So your psyche is almost like a radio transmitter, picking up on the frequency of that particular place and communicating it to you through memories, through thoughts, through random little songs that are moving through your field. And see how your body feels in relationship to that frequency. Just because a frequency or a song or a memory or a message is coming through and saying hello back to you, it doesn't mean that that is a sign or a, you know, it doesn't have to mean anything that grand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we start to get into deeper conversation with this medicine, right? It's like, if, you know, if every time someone said hello, I thought it was like a sign that I'm on the right path. I would be super scrambled in my frequency and in my capacity to be with life and be with change and be with what is here for me right now. So inviting yourself to go deeper than hello, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then engaging that, seeing, well, how does that land for me? What is, does that resonate with me? Is that also attuned with what my soul wants, what my soul has come to do, even if I don't quite know what that is yet? Like, does that feel, does that frequency feel like home in my body?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is one way to like, invite yourself into the conversation of like, when you're looking for that convert, like that, that sign, or you're looking for the divine to come and meet you, right? Practice attuning your own frequency to what is available at a time, a place, or in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing yourself to be like sort of like a radio transmitter, or allowing your sort of field of vision to become a projector for like the frequency of that place, and begin to discern the difference between your frequency and that place's frequency and the conversation that your spirit, your subtle body is having with that place and time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gathering all this information. I love that you called it, how did you say it? Inviting God in to meet you or something mm-hmm. like that. It feels like sometimes I think I get the visual of like trying to understand the intuitive realm as it's kind of like putting yourself out into this grand big space. It sometimes feels like you're feeling around in the dark for something. Mm-hmm. And that can be really terrifying if you are a person who is scared of the dark. You know, you're kind of feeling around and groping around for whatever might be there. And whatever feedback you get back is kind of yours to start to create a reality out of that, you know, and then rebuild from there. I want to hear a little bit about who excites you as a story doula yourself. Is there anybody who you feel like was pivotal in your own like path? Or is there somebody who you just love to feed on their words, who excites you?
Hmm. So I definitely feel like one of my main teachers, Miriam Hasnat, is such a big like frequency in my field as like a teacher, and just the level of sovereignty I'm encouraged to have when I'm in, you know, in class, right? And so it's not like, you know, I think sometimes with our teachers, and this goes along with the conversation we were just having, sometimes with our teachers, it can be really easy to merge with them and to become enmeshed with them. And I really love it when a teacher is like, oh yeah, actually I just want you to be sovereign and individuated in your own field and run everything I say through your own inner wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So as a model for my work, Miriam Hasnat has been like really encouraging to me as someone who is also a Black woman, is also like very highly sensitive, is also autistic, is also like has some dyslexia going on, also like is an energy worker, works with flower medicine, just does all the things. And then there's also this, all this permission to just be in my own lane and just receive, and to also model my own teaching style after that level of like inviting people into their own sovereignty, inviting people into their own bodies and boundaries and individuation. As individuated parts of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
So she's one person. Another person who's coming to mind right now is Bill Plotkin, who is, he's a psychotherapist based in Utah, actually. And are you familiar with his work?
Not, no.
Okay. Well, he basically kind of left the field, not like in a huff and puff, but in this deep, deep desire to have more nuanced conversations about the process of human development, and creating whole cultures and change and rites of passage and initiation. And in one of his most recent books, Journey of Soul Initiation, he, in the introduction, talks about how the earth, through the landscape of dreams and through his sort of vision fasts in the Utah deserts has invited him to be a cocoon weaver, which is his own way of calling himself a death walker, right? So being able to walk with both birth and death. And he's, you know, not walking with people at the end of life, and he's not walking with people in physical birth, but in the rebirthing of self and our concept of self, and growing healthy, well-developed egos that are not stuck at 3 years old or 5 years old, in the five-year-old self-protectional, but is able to expand and grow into like that generous, impactful elder who knows their role, like that level of ego development. And his work has really inspired me, and really held me in many ways over the last year and a half of such deep change, of recognizing, hey, Daje, like change is not a failure. Like change is not failure, right? Which is the message we often get from culture, that change is failure. It's not. It's a natural process of human development. And can you roll with that? Can you allow that? And can you witness yourself in that, and then open yourself up to the gift and the gold that's available here? So those are two people who are really inspiring my world, two among many who I look up to as teachers in my work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. I have maybe just one or two more questions. Mm-hmm. We'll kind of wrap up from here, but I think there's so much talk about reformulating oneself, being or embracing death moments or tower moments, and what that process looks like to get down low and listen. But for someone who might be unraveling their story of self, and trying to kind of figure out who they are on the other side of that, where is like the first little thing that you might hint at them so that they can start to unravel and feel safe doing so?
Yeah, I think I'm going to say the thing that I've been saying for years, like when I first started my blog in 2013, I think it was, even back then, which is, be kind to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Like,
that is the single most important thing that you can do in these processes of deep change and unraveling, whether you initiated them, these states of change where you said, I need to switch it up, or I want to become this version of myself, or I want to see if I can do this, right? Be kind to yourself. Or if change has come to you, and new layers of identity are being revealed to you. So for example, if you're going through a divorce or a pretty bad breakup, or a family member has died, and these experiences have cracked you open and revealed to you that there are more parts of you than you thought that there were before, be kind to yourself. The reason why it's so important to be kind to yourself is because change is going to feel and look wrong sometimes. It's going to feel messy. It's going to take you out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And kindness is the best gift that you can give yourself as you begin to unpeel and delayer and allow yourself to be, become like the mush of, you know, the little worm, caterpillar, not worm, the little wormy guy, the little caterpillar who becomes a cocoon, and he literally completely decomposes in there. It's not cute.
it sucks. But you know what? Change is that way. Change is real gross sometimes. To look that way.
Totally. You know,
Daje, what are you in search of right now?
That is a good question. You know, this is one of those seasons where I feel like I don't have like a articulate answer to that question. Not that I have like arrived by any stretch of the imagination to anyone.
Have any of us arrived?
what is that? Don't know. But if I were to say that I'm in search of anything, it's like just continued connection and cultivation with like-hearted people. I feel like when you find like-hearted people who your heart just like sings and resonates around, there's just all this desire to like want to build together and do the big, you know, just like connective web thing where you're like talking about the farm, as we millennials do, that you're gonna all buy together. And not that I want to do that, because I can't farm, I'm not a farmer, but I definitely like that field of resonance is like, I'm looking for more of that in my world, and I'm finding it, and I want more of it. I want to be completely surrounded, by that honeyed hum, that frequency of like, oh yeah, this is a life that feels like my soul essence can be expressed here without hindrance. This is the environment. These are the people where my soul can be expressed without hindrance.
I love that. Thank you. It's like the threshold where all things are possible, as Miss Nina Simone says, where, you know, freedom, no fear. Thank you. Where can people find you?
People can find me on the internet at www.thestorydoula.co or on Instagram at thestorydoula, or Threads if you're on Threads. And there is a course that I am putting on in November, starting November 3rd, called Writing New Somatic Myths. So this is a course about, for those of you who are out there who are like, I'm going through change, but what do I do with all this change? How do I move with all this change? How do I be with all this change? And where is change leading me, right? We do have choice in the matters of change. We can collaborate with change, and we do that through reality. It's the stories that we tell that sort of create the agreements of our field that we live by, right? And so if you're interested in that work, you can come and join me and others in a 6-week immersion. We'll be dropping into different layers and parts of the human experience where we can start to write new myths and live into them from the very depths of our souls.
Sounds incredible. I'm so looking forward to hearing how that goes for you. So Dajay, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to chat with you. I can't wait for everyone to hear this conversation and be fed by it. Thank you.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's birdgerhl_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.